in my interactions with her, and maybe this is when we're all made from the same cloth, because a lot of people think we're intimidating, Rachel and I, I'm like, never did intimidating cross my mind about Jessica. But maybe because we're like,
because you don't know me well enough yet. No, I'm just kidding.
We are entering a third season of Women Your Mother Warned You About.
And we still don't know what we're doing. Let that be actually a really good lesson. Let's start with that lesson.
What's the lesson?
A lot of times we think that everybody, you think that you're like seeing someone that you respect or follow, and you think they have their shit together just because of the way they present themselves.
To the outside and world.
Yeah. And the truth is that, you know, they take a shit too, and it smells bad, and they fuck shit up, and they do the wrong thing, and they forget, you know, to do stuff, and everybody's normal.
It happens. You have to be willing to admit it. I admit it all the time. I am bad at math. This is important to know. I'm like, all the years that I've been like...
Wait a second. You're bad at math? Wait, you told me numbers are important.
They are. But listen,
do you not like train people to watch like their ratios and calculate how many calls it's going to take?
Oh, Lord.
I try to dance around that shit, Jessica. I'm going to be real here. I know we both work for Sales Gravy, and my calculations are not always good. Okay. But what's even worse besides ratios, which, you know, we should be good at, I screw things up, like how many people should be in a breakout room.
Oh yeah, like open how many rooms per person. And
yes, this just happened to me today. I mean, this is,
she's talking about Zoom, by the way, people.
Yes,
out there.
So, well, I think most people know that now because we're in this new.
You never know.
It's true. Back in the day, before Zoom, and
in 2019, before you knew everything,
before breakout rooms, when I taught classes in person, and I had to break people out into groups, I've struggled with that too. I'd be like, okay, I need you guys to be in pairs, and there's like 40 of you. So if we 40 divided by 2, okay.
20.
But I would always screw something up. And I did it again today on Zoom. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to put you guys into groups of 4. So, and then I sent them into 5 breakouts, but there were 40 of them. Anybody know the math on that?
8.
So they ended up 8 people to a group instead of 4 people to a group.
So you needed 8 rooms of 4 instead of 4 of 8, or not.
No, because she had 5 rooms.
I had 5 rooms of 8 instead of, right. See?
10 rooms of 4.
Anyway.
See, I've been doing 6th grade algebra, and I'm getting pretty fucking good at this lately. Like, when I was in 6th grade, I didn't know what the hell was going on. But now that I'm teaching my kids 6th grade algebra, I'm like, dude, I fucking got this. And she's like...
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about that. So first of all, welcome to another episode of The Women Your Mother Warned You About. And this is, it's not really a rogue episode, but it is now because we just started talking. So we'll call it rogue. And we brought in a good friend and coworker of mine from Sales Gravy, Jessica Stokes. So let's welcome Jessica to The Women Your Mother Warned You About.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yay.
I'm definitely one of those women.
Are you?
Oh, really? So, yeah, that was the question.
Take it, Rachel.
Thanks for the segue. So, we have a little question we ask all our guests, and that is, do you consider yourself a woman your mother warned you about?
Well, she already said yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And why?
Let's see. I would say probably because I intimidate most people. Especially, I think even men, I mean, I'm married now, but, you know, I think I can come across pretty intimidating because I'll try anything once. I'm kind of like this bring it on, you know, kind of mentality and attitude. And I think that sometimes that intimidates people. Like,
if you
want to go jump out of a plane, I'll be the first one to say, let's go and do it. You want to say, hey, random karaoke night, I'm driving. Like, I'll just.
So have you jumped out of a plane?
Twice.
Oh, Jesus.
How did I not know this about you? Because you know what? We're so busy, we don't have time to talk to each other. How about that?
Yeah, I did that when I was, I think like 21 was the first time I did it. I'd want to do it from the time I was in high school. And my father said, absolutely not. And I actually had a close family friend who was going to purchase me skydiving as a graduation gift. And my father, no way, not going to happen. What if something happens? And that was her graduation gift. So when I finally, you know, moved on and was on my own, that was one of the first things I did was, okay, you know what? I'm jumping out of a plane because I've always wanted to do it.
I love this.
Yeah.
It terrifies me to no end. So I'm impressed with your bravery.
I love that she's so tough. I had no idea. I don't think Jeb Blunt has any idea that he's got like two women like us. Maybe he does know.
I'm pretty sure he knows. He's kind of astute.
Yeah. Well, I was also in the military, which is kind of a choice that not many, girls make going out of high school. So I was in the Air Force for 4 years after high school. So that's kind of badass too.
That is badass. Is that in your bio? Cause I don't remember, I don't remember reading that.
Yeah. Somebody else is doing military training. Ta-da,
I know. I'm like, how am I not doing military training?
How are you not doing military training?
Don't worry. You probably will be soon.
What? Why is this not in your bio?
Maybe I need to look at my bio again.
You need to look at your bio.
I second that.
That is so badass, Jessica. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. So you can fly a plane?
I cannot fly a plane. So I was in the Air Force, but I was an engineer. So I worked on all the telecom that linked everything from the airfield to the, generals that were out there on the ground, and a very mathematical job. I don't know how I got into it.
Tell me about it. I work in mortgage now, and I'm like, how the fuck did I get into this scenario where I look at fucking numbers all day and do calculations? Like, what happened to me?
So you went from high school to Air Force.
It's actually kind of funny. So the story that prompted me to this is horrible. This is so funny, but it's so true. So I come from a super tiny small town in upstate New York. And when I say super tiny, I went to preschool with 28 kids, graduated as a senior with the same 28. So it's like a private school, but it's actually public. It's just such a little Mayfair, Mayberry kind of town. So
all 28 made it, eh?
Oh, and you're related to half of them. So, I mean, it's like awesome. you want to get out of that town almost as quickly as possible. So my girlfriend and I are roaming the halls one day. It's, career day where they have the recruiters from all over the place come into the high school. And we're walking by, and we went by just to get a free pen, or whatever it was they were giving out. And the recruiter was pretty smart. Okay, so Gina, you're teaching military recruiting. So this is pretty smart tactics. So his name was Leo. And Leo says to me and my friend Brandy, "Well, what are you guys going to do after high school?" We're like, "Well, we're going to college, whatever." And he's like, "Well, have you ever thought about the military?" "No, we're not going to the military." So he said, "Well, who do you guys, this is a pretty small school. How do you guys meet guys?" And I'm like, "We don't really that much." He goes, "Well, once a month I hold a pizza party and there's like 20 schools in the area and all the guys come and, it might be fun for you guys to just come one night." And we're like, "That's totally lame." And so a couple days later, we had nothing coming up on Friday night, of course. So she says, "Hey, Jess, you want to drive to that, town down the road and go to this military pizza night?" So I'm like, "All right." So we jump in my car and we drive to the next town over and we go to this pizza night. And it was kind of a bust. I mean, there were some cute guys there, but, we didn't approach them or anything like that. But we kept going. It was like the first Friday. He did it every month, the first Friday. We went 3 or 4 months in a row. And there was once or twice that someone would be like, "Oh, after this little meeting, everybody's walking around the mall," when teenagers used to do that, right? So we did that. And after 3 or 4 times, we're driving home and my girlfriend says, "Have you actually been listening to what he's been saying about travel the world and get paid to do it and free college?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "I'm actually really thinking about this now." And I'm like, "I am too." So we both went home and told our parents that we thought we wanted to go in the military. They both said no. They're like, "No, you guys are going to college." And we kept going to these monthly things and eventually convinced our parents to let us join the military instead. So we both joined the Air Force. She actually retired last year. She did a full, 20 plus year career. I just did my 4 years and got out. But that was super cool, but totally rando. I mean, that's a woman your mom warned you about, the one who's going to just go to military recruiting for a free pizza and maybe look at, a couple of cute guys.
That's a genius sales technique. Genius.
That is such a cool story.
Yeah. Yes. So
I love it. So then how did you segue into your sales career from, so you get out of the Air Force, then what?
So I got out of the Air Force, and I was stationed in South Georgia, down in Warner Robins Air Force Base in South Georgia. And the time I got out was right after the Olympics had been here in Atlanta. So there was a ton of job opportunities. A lot of the military people who were getting out of the military at that time were moving up here, you know, to find, there was so much work in telecom, and that was the industry I was in. But when I got out, I didn't want to stay in engineering. I thought that I didn't think I was smart enough for it. Honestly, I'm like, you know, it's kind of thinking, you know, engineering level felt a little over the top for me, and I didn't really love it that much. So I came to Atlanta to go to college, went to Georgia State, and I was just waitressing, bartending on the side to kind of get through school. It was actually a customer of mine who recommended I get into sales. So I had a regular customer at the bar that I did, you know, work at, and he'd come in like every other Tuesday or something. He always got the same thing, like a Guinness and prime rib or whatever it was. And you could tell he was there for work, like always still dressed in his work clothes, always alone and whatever. And so after a couple of months, he asked me, you know, why do you work here? Like, don't you want to do something more with your life? I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I'm going to college. I'm almost done right now. And he said, well, I'm always in town because I'm a VP of a communications company, and I think you'd be really good at sales. And I'm like, okay. So he said, you know, come in tomorrow for an interview, meet with my managers. And so he set the table for sure for me to get into that first sales opportunity. But even that opportunity was not true sales. It was really the account management. There was no cold calling at that job. There was nothing really outbound. It was just servicing and upselling existing customers, but it gave me a good little taste. Or is this something, you know, as a 20 something that I might want to see myself doing? And I liked it. And actually I was there for a long time. They eventually closed that telecom company that I worked for. And I found my first real cold calling job where I was like, oh yeah, I could cold call. I've been doing sales for like 2 years. They're like, have you ever actually cold called? I'm like, how hard could it be? I mean, I talk to people all the time on the phone and they're yeah. So then I got a real taste sitting down like with a true, you know, printed out Excel list of all these businesses in the area that I had to cold call and sell a case of copy paper to. So that was interesting, but it was fun at the same time. Like there was something about the thrill and the challenge that I found fascinating when I started doing it.
I think
now that's an interesting phrase you don't hear about sales a lot of time, the thrill and the challenge. And that is such a good way to look at it.
Well, it's a mindset. Calling. It's a mindset. I tell people that I get more excited about getting an appointment than closing a deal. To me, it's like, I got an appointment. Yes. I know it's like so queer.
No, I just like immediately was like trying to think of some kind of obnoxious sexual reference of like, oh, so you like the foreplay more than closing the deal.
Yeah. It was a good try. It was a good try.
That's why I was laughing.
But I think that there's also to be something to be said about the 20 something person, right? Because you don't know what you don't know and you go in wide eyed and, you know, I talk about this in like my what to say workshop on like being like a playful child, right? Like when you're in that playfulness and you're not overthinking it, it can actually be fun. Cold calling, no problem.
Let's see what happens.
What could be so hard after 99 no's?
Yeah, I always liked it. I thought it was, I mean, I think also that because my first real sales job was a pure cold calling. I mean, we were making 70 to 80 cold calls a day to get maybe two people who were going to talk to us again. So that's pretty tough, but it, you know, again, the thrill of having that one person who's like, oh yeah, I'll take some information. I'd love to talk to you again Tuesday at 2:00. You're like, oh my gosh, like my day's made, even though I didn't even actually make a sale yet. So, you know, yeah, I think when you start young and you do it right away, it's almost like then everything feels a little easier. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I got the appointment. If I can make, you know, 65 calls to get two people to agree to talk to me again than leading an appointment or, you know, trying to ask them, you know, talk about price or contract or proposal. That's all a piece of cake.
I was just saying, that's like, that's like the easy stuff. Yeah, that, yep. I think maybe that's why I get a high on getting an appointment. So the wackiest thing, oh, I don't think I got a chance to tell you this, Rachel. So today I did a what to say when you don't know what to say workshop. We had to open another one because the last one was sold out. And we had to open another, well, they've all been sold out, which is great. But what had happened with the last one is a local real estate firm had contacted Sales Gravy wanting to buy 35 seats. And I think we cap out at 40 or 45. So we didn't have enough room. So we had to open up another session today. But I didn't know that this real estate firm, it was their Myrtle Beach office. So it was 35 people from their Myrtle Beach office in the course.
Good for them.
And I was like, what? You're all in Myrtle Beach?
Over there. Hey.
I'm like,
hey, by the way, here's a little, I'll throw a lead at you.
Uh-huh.
So since I started at US Mortgage, my regional manager has been trying to get Jeb Blunt to come and speak mm-hmm. for an event. So now you work for them. So now you can be the speaker.
Well, I think we said that would be plan B because they can't afford Jeb.
They can't. Well, yes, they can. They just don't want
they
to.
Can. They can.
They can, but they might need to see the value in one of their other sales trainers.
Maybe.
Who offers skills like improvising.
Maybe. Well, I found this very interesting that this group, this is kind of an interesting conversation. I don't know if it's a conversation in value. And by the way, Jess, you listen to the show. We just kind of roll into conversation, right? Whatever's the top of our little minds at the end of the day.
after we're squirrel brains.
Yeah.
We promise Gina will make you important again here in a second when she gets to the point.
I don't mind. I enjoy the back and forth banter and not having to be the one.
Exactly. This is just a banter. It's a banter.
Continue your story.
So I'm like, oh, so you guys are in Myrtle Beach. I'm like, oh, okay. And one of them's like, yeah, I've been to one of your shows. I'm like, oh, and it's like three more people like, yeah, we've been to your theater. And I'm like, okay, you guys know I live here, right? Why have you never hired me before? When I did this for my own company.
Well, you know, the beauty of the beauty that we have found in the constraint of COVID is that it's actually really, I know because I have been a realtor for more than 10 years. It's hard to get a bunch of realtors to show up in a place and settle on a time because they're running all around. They're freaking the worst of the squirrel chasers. And they really don't want to show up unless there's alcohol most of the time or food, which is most people. Like. And so now that it's virtual, they can do it from wherever. You know, I think it's just really open doors for organizations like Sales Gravy that were ready to pounce.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because they were looking for something that had relevancy, but also was fun, like right before the holiday. Is why they did that. And to your point, COVID and going virtual, and they're on Sales Gravy's mailing list, and they happen to like see my name and said, oh, we know her.
Oh, I know Gina.
We know her. She's at Sales Gravy. It's just a weird, like, they see you in a different kind of light.
Yeah. Well, serendipity too. There you go. Back to the Jennifer show.
Or the Jessica show.
Sorry.
Squirrel brain.
That's okay. Do you know how many times that happens? Jennifer and Jessica were like the two most popular names in the late 70s and 80s. So if you weren't a Jennifer, you were a Jessica.
There you go. Sorry. Okay. Jessica Rabbit. There you go. I'll get it right.
I think Jessica Rabbit. Run with it, Rachel. Run with it.
Yes. So tell me, Jessica. Tell me about, let's go back to the military thing just for a second.
I love this.
Because we've talked to a few other women in the military. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious about what your experience is as a woman in the military. Were there any moments where you were like, this is a man's world? even more so than, you know, normal world.
Yeah, 100%. But I think that that also is part of like the loving a challenge part of my personality, because you know that going in, you know, if you're a woman in the military, you know, going in that there's, I don't know what the statistics is, but, you know, one woman for every 200 guys enlisted or whatever it is. It's crazy. And
I'm surprised I didn't go into the military when I was young.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so for sure. And I think one of the moments I remember the most about feeling that way was when I finally, so, you know, you go to basic training, that's all fine. Because in basic training, it's like girls with girls, boys with boys, you know, it's kind of, you're only competing in a way against the other women that you're there with. And then you go to your schooling, to your test school, which is basically where they take 4 years of college and condense it into, you know, months. So as an engineer, I had a 10-month technical school. And there was, I mean, I don't even know. I was the only female in my particular class, which probably had 20 to 30 guys in the class. And then there was multiple classes going on in these college dorms, essentially. So you feel that for sure when you're walking around and it's all guys, but you get used to it really quickly too. And I think I'm kind of a tomboy anyway. So I never had a problem feeling intimidated or anything. But when I got done with my technical school, you get your orders for where your permanent station is going to be, which brought me here to Georgia. And the first day I showed up at the shop, I was the only woman in the shop and the new person. So you guys talk about the imposter syndrome. Oh, big time, big time. Here I am. I don't even know my way around the base and I'm, you know, 18 years old and, you know, whatever. So I go and, you know, they all try to be nice, but you can kind of tell there's this, oh, we now have a girl in our group. You know, like, are we really going to be able to cuss and fart and, you know, act like boys? And, you know, is she going to be all, oh, I need to go to HR, you know, kind of, you know, you could pick up on that. Mm-hmm. And so one day, one of the hotshots in the group, he was asked by one of the leaders to take me out driving, because we had to drive around big equipment in these trucks. And so they're like, well, you know, do you know how to drive a stick shift? And I said, yes. And so I don't think they believed me. And so we went out into this huge, you know, 5-ton vehicle, and he was giving me driving lessons, and I had no problem driving the vehicle. And so he was incredibly impressed, and he came back to the shop and he said to everyone, he goes, she can drive a truck. Like, I mean, actually, is she in a stall? I mean, like, she's not joking. She is kind of cool. And so it was all these like little things that I could do. Yeah. So it was like, okay, she knows how to drive a stick. And okay, I didn't know how to change tire on one of those things. But so there was definitely moments where you feel like a big time imposter being a woman and being in that kind of career field. If I was like in a hospital or something different, I probably wouldn't have felt that as much, because in an environment like that, nurses or doctors or whatever, there probably are more females in those roles. So I think also the job I was assigned to was very, very male dominated.
How did that prepare you then for the civilian work world?
I think it was an awesome experience to prepare me, because you get used to kind of that, you know, the discomfort that could come with feeling out of place. And then you learn that, okay, if I can prove that I can work just as hard, because there was times, you know, there was physical work too. You know, you're packaging things up and putting on backs of trucks or wrapping them in pallets. And so it only took a few times of them to say, oh, you can stay in the office and write the reports. And I'm like, no, I can get out there. And, you know, I mean, maybe I can't pick up the same physical size of carton as you guys can, but I can help. I can still do things. And so I think being able to dive in and say, you know, I'm still going to try and I'm still going to be active and I'm not going to just sit in the office and do the paperwork. Like, I can do the physical labor and I want to participate, and I'm not going to almost take advantage maybe even of the girl card. Like, no, like, bring it on. Like, let me be as involved as I can. And I think that I gained a lot of respect from the men that I worked with when they saw that, okay, you know, she really does want to try. She really does want to work hard, and she doesn't want to just kind of skate by or have us do all the work while she's doing the easy job. So, so I think that definitely prepared me even in sales. My first sales career it was mostly men. There was when I started it at the first company that I did a lot of that cold calling for, it there was one other woman, and actually a much, much older woman to me at the time. And then it was 10 or 15 guys on the phone, and they're, you know, a total boys club. They get off work, they're going to the softball game, they're drinking beer. I wasn't a part of that, which again, makes you feel like that imposter too, that everybody's getting off of work. They're all going to softball practice and having beers. And it's like, well, are they going to invite me to come along one day, you know, or something, which I never did get invited to. I mean, maybe over the years they would have been like, well, Jesse, if you want to come out, but yeah. So I think it helped me build some thick skin for sure.
Yeah. It would have to. I think of women who would kind of shrivel up and not, who don't throw themselves in. And as we started at the beginning of this, are you a woman that your mother warned you about? You know, Rachel and I are also those women that will throw ourselves in. But I think there are a lot of women that don't, because they somehow did not get prepared for it and didn't get the skills for it. I don't know. I guess I sort of know how I got it. And I got it from my dad, sort of. I mean, I think I was raised by a tough dad. I don't know, Rachel, where'd you get yours? School of Hard Knocks.
I think really it comes from a competitiveness between my siblings. Mm. That's where I think mine came from. There are four of us. My dad worked really hard. Especially I remember when I was young and he was building his business. He had a dentistry practice. He was always gone. My mom stayed home with us until we were all in school, and then she went and got a nursing degree. But when there's that many kids around, like the response of approval is measured, or at least it was in my house, because you can't like make somebody the favorite. Mm. So no matter what you do, it'd be like, oh, that's great, you know, kind of thing. Whereas I have one child, so everything she does is like the fucking greatest thing that ever happened, right? But, you know,
so where did you fall in the order, Rachel?
I am baby girl. My brother is younger than me. And my thing was, because all of my siblings went to like really good schools. They all have good degrees. And I didn't go to college. I was the dancer. I did not really give a shit. I was, you know, valedictorian and got two scholars, full rides to college that I didn't take. But, you know, I was like, I can do that later, which is still true. I went off and did my dance career, and then went on to later when I needed a real job. That's when I got into real estate, and then I consequently mortgaged. But it was just a competition of us kids. And it still is, like when we get together at Christmas time, like this week, it'll be like everybody talking over top of each other and everybody, you know, like trying to win the attention. I think that's where I got it from. My parents are tough, but they, you know, I don't believe that they directly instilled that in us. I think we created it amongst ourselves.
That's interesting. Jessica, how'd you end up at Sales Gravy?
So how I ended up at Sales Gravy, I actually lost my job due to COVID in the end of June. So, it was such a blessing. I really do believe everything in our life happens for a reason. Like I have that positive outlook. If you do find yourself in that job loss or, you know, end of a relationship or whatever it might be, like I really do try to remind myself that there's a reason that these things happen. However, for me, when I went into the office that morning and was told that, you know, I'd be done at the end of the month or whatever, it actually felt like relief. Mm. I don't know if you guys have ever been in a job where, yes, you know, in your heart, yes, you didn't want to be there. Yes. Yeah. I was doing training, but it was a corporate training role. So I was kind of tied to just one industry, one group of salespeople, one, you know, where I had worked for a company like Sales Gravy prior, where it's different clients, different energy, different outlooks. And I knew that that was really where I like to be, but you know, life is life. And sometimes we make a choice for, you know, money or advancement or whatever it is. And then in hindsight, we're like, you know, so as soon as I was told I was losing my job, I actually felt awesome. I came home. I remember I came home and my husband says, "You're home from work early. I wasn't expecting you until at least lunchtime." And I'm like, yeah, they let me go. And he's like, okay. And I'm like, I actually feel kind of good about it. Like, I really do. And I'm like, I know it's COVID and who knows what kind of jobs are out there. Who knows who's, I mean, I might not find a job for 6 months, a year, who knows? But I think also, at least for me, you lose your job in your mid 40s, you're more financially stable and prepared for stuff like this than you are in your 20s and 30s, where it's like, oh my gosh, am I going to pay my, you know, rent? Like, I mean, we felt good. Like, it wasn't like a take any job that comes yeah. that you're going to hate. So I said, I'm going to only job search for companies and places that I truly want to be. I'm not going to take a job just to get by at my age. I'd rather just stay home. So one of the first things I did is I direct messaged Jeb on LinkedIn. And I kind of gave my little spiel about how I've read his books. I admire him. I've trained his sales techniques in companies that I've worked for, you know, using fanatical prospecting and everything. And that if he was hiring at Sales Gravy for a training coordinator role or a junior, you know, however I could get my foot in the door at Sales Gravy, I'd love to. And I was utterly shocked when within 12 hours, I think, he replied to my LinkedIn message and wanted my contact information and said that they were interviewing, and he'd already scoured me through LinkedIn and said I could absolutely be somebody, you know, who might want to have a conversation with. And it was so funny because I remember sitting on the couch looking at my phone when that message came back from him, and my husband was sitting there. I was like, oh my gosh, Jeb actually replied to me. Like, I mean, I thought it would just be a deleted, never, you know, but I'm like, I just went out on a limb. I'm like, I'm thinking of a place that I would love to work. And what do I have to lose? I mean, going right to Jeb and saying, look, I admire your work and I'd love to work for your company. And I know I can like kick ass and, you know, I'd like worst case, he doesn't reply. Or worst case, he replies and he's like, are you kidding me? No way. But that wasn't what happened. So, you know, I was like just super stoked and started the interview process and here I am now. So, but it was just that I'm just going to jump out, you know, reach out to that person I just want to be connected with and put myself out there. So
I love that story. That is such an awesome story.
Good stuff. I mean, and that's a great tidbit for people as well. There's a lot of people losing their jobs, and there probably still will be some more people that lose their jobs depending on how things go. And you can look at it as opportunity, and why not reach out to, you know, the person you want to work for the most, because they might say yes. Like, they might say yes. I swear, my daughter's dad, he's an excellent, excellent drummer. Excellent. He left his job one day and I said, why don't you reach out to the top 5 bands on the entire planet that you'd like to play drums with? Because I guarantee, knowing all the bands that I know, one of them needs a new drummer. He never did it. And I was like, you're a fool. Cause you just never know. Like you said, Jessica, what do you have to lose? Like a no, another no. It's just another in a series of no's, but it also might be a yes.
You don't get what you don't ask for.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think too, when it comes, you know, for people who, you know, might be looking for jobs, especially is, you know, not every job that you're looking for is posted somewhere, you know, on LinkedIn or Indeed or all these. I mean, not all employers use all those places. They don't all use recruiters. And sometimes they're thinking about hiring, like, you know, Sales Gravy was not advertising for trainers anywhere. I mean, it was not, you know, I'd already looked, I'd already been, you know, I wonder if they're hiring, went to their website, see if there was any hiring, and there was nothing. So I'm like, you know, this is something I want. I'm just going to ask. So I do think that a lot of companies also, they might not market jobs, or they might be still thinking like, oh, we might need to hire that additional person in HR, or we might need to hire that additional person in the accounting team, but they haven't got to it yet.
They don't have time. Busy. They don't they're have time. Busy. And then exactly. You show up and they're like, mm-hmm. Yes, you.
Yes. And the fact of the matter is, like, I've had discussions with somebody very recently about finding employees, but really good employees are also hard to find. So if you have someone with a glowing resume like yours that shows up at the doorstep and you, like, somebody like Jeb knows they need somebody good, it's just like mucking through all the totally unqualified people that would show up if Jeb did post.
I can't even, what I know now that I didn't know then about Jeb, I can't even imagine him going through that whole process of like a recruiting process and resume. Like, I can't even imagine, just because he's so busy. I just can't even imagine. Yeah. So there are companies that, well, I interviewed someone years ago on the Pivotal Leader podcast who said he hired people based on talent, even though he didn't have jobs for them. Purely on, this person's so talented, we will mold them to the company.
Been there. That's what I got hired at JVZU. I had no idea how to do anything that they, like, that was a really great job experience because I had no idea how to do anything. I had to learn how to do all of it, but they just knew that I was quick, you know, and I learned a lot. So then you started, you said, Jessica, you started in June, July. And I'm curious about your onboarding, since Gina's been like drinking from the fire hydrant of knowledge.
What is she drinking from the fire? Are you drinking margaritas like me?
Wait, I'm not drinking from the fire hydrant. I'm like swimming, trying not to drown.
Gotcha.
So Gina and I started, I mean, within a month or two, mm-hmm. I guess, of each other. I guess I officially started maybe August 1st, might be like my official new hire
date.
And
I was October 1st, so it's 2 months.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I was warned, I have to say, I was warned multiple times by anyone that I talked to during the, you know, interview or interest phase. Yeah, everyone's like, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, you know, things move fast around here and there's a lot of things you're going to have to just pick up and, you know, take on yourself. And if you need something done, you're just going to have to do it because everybody's just too busy. And it was funny because I remember I was talking, I can't remember who it was I was talking to. One of the trainers, I think, one of the existing trainers. And they said, well, how much time do you think you're going to need to get familiar with the content? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, I know a lot of jobs content pretty well, but you know, I want to make sure I'm sitting on people's trainings and get, I'm like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. And they kind of laughed. And they're like, oh, that sounds beautiful. You mean like 4 or 5 days? I mean, I'm like, well, I don't know all the technology. I mean, all this crazy technology we have in the studios and, you know, content wise, I could walk in a classroom, you know, almost any day, but, you know, figuring out how to produce myself at home and get all this equipment bought. And I'm like, I don't know. And so it felt very fast from, you know, kind of coming on board. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, I have trainings that I have to do. And what if I mess up or what if, you know, what if they ask me a question to throw? So it was so crazy. I mean, just, it went so fast, but there's something I also do appreciate about that, where just, I think there's a level of trust that Jeb and the rest of the staff at Sales Gravy almost puts in us as trainers is we know how to train salespeople or you wouldn't have a job here. Like if you didn't know your shit, if you didn't know what was going on, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to get into it. You're definitely going to mess up. You're going to have some problems, whether it's technology or content or whatever it's going to be, but those are also helping us learn. So yeah, it feels like I've been here for years already and it's only been how many months?
Ooh. I haven't even been there 3 months yet. And I feel it's 3 years.
The more I hear about this whole scenario, the more I dig it. I'm like, I like that he can get so many, it seems like everyone that works for the company has, you know, an overload workload, but you guys like it.
I think it's interesting, you know, for years I used to do a lot of training in the area of culture and how do you create the right culture, but how do you attract people to your culture? So I really believe that the Sales Gravy culture is a unique culture and you either fit it or you don't. And I think that's what's so unique about, I think it's unique because you got to be able to move, roll. There's no crying in training. You know, you pick yourself up when you fuck something up. I got my hand slapped for something else recently. I'm like, yep, that was my fault. That's right. Screwed that up. And then you roll with it. And if you stay in the mindset of our job is to, like, you know, not just deliver, but over deliver and give return on investment, and just, and you're in that mindset, everybody just hustles and everybody helps each other. So as fast paced as it is, as crazy as it is, everybody helps each other. to deliver, and everybody loves what they do. I mean, that's been my experience.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, I mean, everyone seems, but I do think it's a culture that you would know within a week or two if you couldn't fit in,
yeah,
or if right. you couldn't hang, or if you're going to get, you know, offended because it's, you know, last minute and a project's got, you know, thrown in your lap that somebody else dropped the ball on, or they just need to shift gears. So, yeah, I think you do pick up on all those dynamics very quickly mm-hmm. at the organization. And it's either something that you're willing to, you know, take on and tackle, or you're not. And if you're not, you're probably not going to, you know, love working here like everybody does seem to love. And I mean, but the thing I also appreciate is while, you know, I do feel busy personally, I think I manage the perfect work-life balance for myself right now, because, you know, I, you know, of course, you know, have kiddos and I have things I like to do outside of work and things like that. So, so it's a great, great company to work for, because if you know you want to do something and you don't want to be training a particular day of the week, a particular time of the day, you know, whatever, then you just don't do it. You know, they'll find another trainer who, you know, wants to do a Friday night training.
Default.
But and even with that, if you know, I don't like days where I do more than maybe 4 hours worth of training. It feels exhausting because you have to keep up the energy, the enthusiasm. You're like on, you know, on stage. And so I know for me, if I do more than 4 hours in a day, I know I'm dragging. By like session five or session six, they're not getting yeah. the version of me that I want them to get. So I think it's also understanding, you know, what your balance is. And we have some trainers who, you know, probably train 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, 3 or 4 days a week. I can't roll like that. I know.
11 hours somebody did.
Okay, so wait, rewind. Who the fuck wants sales training on a Friday night?
International client. It's got to be an international client.
Gotcha. Yeah, no? Yeah.
I think I ended up with that project and it turned out to be West Coast. There was a West Coast client, but they actually moved it to the afternoon. So it went from an evening to an afternoon.
Right. So it would have been evening to you, but it would have been 3 hours earlier. So
yeah,
for them.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. I just finished a crazy time. I just finished a client that we kicked off their training at 9 o'clock at night Eastern. It went from 9 to 11 at night. And then the same client had another division that their session started at 7 a.m. the following day, every day. So you're doing training from 9 to 11 at night and then up getting camera ready for 7 to Girl. 9 the next morning. So but it was only a 3 week. And so it was fun. It was actually really fun. Now if I had to do that every day,
probably not for every day, but 3 weeks you could do.
Yeah. Like 3 sessions, 3 weeks. Fun audience, because that was an international. So you get different, you know, characters and a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. The different characters, the different people. That is a lot of fun.
Jessica, did I see somewhere or hear that you have a black belt?
Oh, yes.
I do. I'm a black belt in Taekwondo. I told you there's so many random, like, you know, tough girl things about me. Yeah. So my son, when he was in pre-K, kindergarten age-ish, I guess, we have a little bit of an ADHD issue in our house. And so it was a recommendation from a teacher actually, who said, you know, he needs to get his energy out a little bit more. Have you ever thought about Taekwondo? And I'm like, well, he's done softball and he hates it. And, you know, everything else. So, I took him to a Taekwondo studio locally. And another great marketing strategy. I'm telling you, I encounter people who do great recruiting and marketing. So my son's karate instructor, who, you know, is a pretty good guy to look at anyway, but you know, he's doing these classes of all these little kiddos. And my son's like in his second month, we go once or twice a week and whatever. And it's about to be May. And so the master instructor is telling all the moms in the audience, well, May, the whole month of May, mothers can come into my adult class for free. It's a Mother's Day special. So you want to get a little bit of extra exercise, you know, come, you know, meet some of the other moms that you might see in the corner waiting for their kids. It's really fun. The adults that come are cool. So he's doing this hardcore sales pitch on all the moms during April. And so I decided to go. I'm like, okay, you know what? I don't mind the idea of working out. So we go to these classes in the evenings, meet some awesome people. So we'd have class for an hour or two and then go have margaritas afterwards. And it was amazing. And so we get done with the first month of training and we're all sitting around after our last free class together and everybody's saying, so who's going to sign up? You know, is anybody actually going to keep doing this? I mean, it's kind of fun, but, and I said, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to do it. I'm like, to get my black belt, it takes 3 years. But I said, that would be super cool. Like here I am like in my midlife and to be able to have a cool black belt, like, yeah, I'm doing it. So I think most of us did it. And most of us got our black belts together 3 years later. But such a cool experience. My whole family ended up, I have a son, and they're all within 3 years of each other. We had three under three when they were born. They all got into it. And my oldest daughter, she and I took it all the way to black belt. She almost got her second degree, but then she decided she loved soccer so much that she didn't want to do both sports at once and left karate for soccer. But, it was fun. I like doing tournaments. So I didn't know this was a thing, but adults around the world show up on Saturdays to spar each other and to kick ass. And I was like, oh my gosh, how fun would that be? So you actually get to punch somebody and you get points for it and you're not in trouble, or you can kick them to the face. And like that could let out some good aggression. So I did that for a season. I'm actually a district champ in the Southeast in 2015. So there's a big tournament. Damn. We're all, you know, Georgia, South Carolina.
So is this like like the Karate Kid, or is Taekwondo a different sport?
I'd have to actually go back. I'd say yes, the Karate Kid. I don't know exactly what form of martial arts Ralph Macchio was doing back in the 80s.
Bullshit. Martial arts is probably what it was.
But yeah,
I was super in love with him.
He was actually, and he's still in that new show.
Yes.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet though.
I've watched it. It is so bad. It's good.
It's terrible. I watched one episode with my husband who's watched the entire thing and he's super picky. And I'm like, you're so picky, but this shit,
it's so bad. It's good.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, Jessica. I actually like, maybe I'll do that one day because what I'm doing right now, I've always aspired to secretly. And I just, COVID forced me into doing the competitions I'm doing right now, but I actually I love that idea of that. So 3 years.
We should go do that together.
It's so fun. You guys will have so much fun. I mean, it was such a great, and even for women, like to get out there and just, but it's like, even when you're sparring. So my best friend and I, we actually met through the whole karate situation. And there was many times at a tournament that we would be the two final women in the ring. Like we've literally already kicked everybody else's ass. And then it's the two of us. And it's fun because it's competitive. So we both want to win, but at the same time, we're both so proud of each other. Like, okay, we're both here. We're going home with one and two, like no matter what. There was one or two times where, you know, I remember being on the side of being number two and I was kind of pissed off. And then we had a 2-hour car ride home together. And I'm like, man, that last move, you shouldn't have got it. That was kind of sketchy. Like the judge could have missed, you know, and then she, you know, so it kind of, there was a little bit of tension sometimes in the relationship around it, but it was so fun and it was so healthy. And oh my gosh, I was in the best shape of my life when I was doing Taekwondo, because I was doing CrossFit every morning for an hour or two. And then I'm doing Taekwondo at night. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine, you know, how many steps or calories I was getting every day when I was doing all that.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool. It has been so fun having you on the show and actually like this for me was kind of like a little indulgent because it was like time to get to know Jessica because we never have time to talk to each other. So selfishly,
getting to know you.
Thank you.
Getting to know all about you.
I don't know what we talked about, but
it's all good.
It's all good.
We do have some closing questions.
Yes, we do.
Awesome.
As we do opening ones. So, Jessica, how would you define the word sexy?
Ooh. Hmm. You can't just say me, can you?
You can say whatever you want. If it's
when I think of sexy, first of all, I do think I am, because I think one of those things about being like a you know, just a confident, beautiful woman is you love what God gave you and you love, you know, what you're bringing to the table. But I think confidence is sexy, like, you know, in a woman or in a man. Mm-hmm. I think just confidence, but friendly confidence, if that makes any sense. So, yes. Yeah.
Approachable.
Like, mm-hmm. Approachable confidence.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I know there's another question, but I have to segue for a second. Is to know Jessica, like, in my interactions with her, and maybe this is when we're all made from the same cloth, because a lot of people think we're intimidating. Rachel and I'm like, never did intimidating cross my mind about Jessica. But maybe because we're like,
you don't know me well enough yet. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I'm a pretty good read on people of, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think when you come from the same kind of cloth.
Yeah, that's because you're confident enough not to be intimidated by
that's
her.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, continue with your question.
There's still time for you to intimidate with your Taekwondo black belt.
Well, that would intimidate me if she karate chopped me.
If she showed up in a ninja outfit and ninja'd you.
Next time I'm coming in the ninja outfit.
That's a great idea.
What's the best advice that you've ever been given?
What a tough question. I wish you guys prepped me for this one. So probably some of the best advice that I've ever been given is, you know, my grandfather used to always tell me as a kiddo, and this has always stuck with me. He would always tell me that it doesn't matter what kind of work you're doing. You always have to put 100% in. So he said, I grew up on a farm. And so he's like, so if your job today is to go literally shovel shit, go do it right the first time. So you're not doing it a second time. And if you take pride in what you're doing, people will notice. And so maybe one day you won't be shoveling shit. You'll be doing something different. So he always talked to all of us a lot about that work ethic. And if you're going to be working, you know, at a fast food chain on the fryer, you better be the best damn fryer that they have, because that's going to get noticed. And you're going to be able to get more of maybe where you want to go if you put 100% into even the tedious, most annoying job that you're faced with.
That's awesome. Great advice.
Yep.
And now, sitting where you sit, is there any advice that you wish you had been given?
I probably needed to receive some advice or feedback along the way of saying no sometimes to stuff. I don't know if it comes from the competitive personality or I don't want to let people down, but I think I'm learning to do this better now. I wish I had done it more in my 30s, where I don't have to be on the PTA and I don't have to be on the HOA and I don't have to sign up for everything. I think I did too much of that for a long time, and I pulled myself way too thin. And then, you know, one day I was like, okay, time out. This is just not working, because I'm exhausted and I'm trying to invest time in my kids, in my family, in the things I like, you know, like my martial arts or whatever. But now I'm having too many things starting to interfere. So I wish somebody had told me, you don't have to say yes to everything. Like, you can just, you know, you can help out when you can help out, but don't feel like you have to take on the world.
We could have all used that advice at some point. But we've learned along the way. It's been awesome having you on the show, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been so fun. I love listening to you guys. You entertain me a lot. I told Gina, you know, especially when I have to do one of those 2-hour drives to the Sales Gravy Studios, I just pop on some of your guys' episodes and I'm laughing and I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, they sound like two women. That you sound like me and my best friend, just like talking, you know, over a glass of wine together about, you know, all the stuff you talk about. So I instantly related as soon as I heard you guys.
Well, awesome. Well, you are officially a woman your mother warned you about. Thank you once again. And this is a wrap for this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. All the things. What things are we supposed to say as we conclude? Thank you, Warners, for listening. How about that?
Thank you, Warners, for listening. And the greatest gift you can give to us is to give the gift of sharing this episode with someone you know that might benefit from this episode or any other episode. All our episodes can be found at womenyourmotherwarnedyou.com, as well as my contact information, Gina's contact information, the elusive Keith Walters contact information. Or you can find me at thesinginglender.com or at my fitness site, ultrafitlifestyle.com.
And if you have not given us a rating or review yet, we love those too. So pop over to wherever you get your podcast and give us a rating and review there. And for more about me, you can check me out at ginatremarco.com or at salesgravy.com. And we are out.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.